Okay, I call the February 20th, 2018 regular meeting of the Glencoe Park District to order. Lisa, please call the roll and note the time.
Commissioner Born?
Yes.
Commissioner Brooks?
Yes.
Commissioner Gaines?
Yes.
Commissioner Ludden?
Yes.
President Underdonk?
Yes.
And it's 7:02.
Okay, next item is the consent agenda. Items A through C are routine. Does any commissioner want any item pulled from the consent agenda? No. Okay. I entertain then a motion to approve the consent agenda as presented in your agenda packet.
So moved.
Second.
Okay. Roll call, please.
Commissioner Born?
Yes.
Commissioner Brooks?
Yes.
Commissioner Gaines?
Yes.
Commissioner Ludden?
Yes.
President Underdonk?
Yes.
Okay, matters from the public?
No public.
No public, okay. Okay, let's move on to the financial report.
Yes, we are now 11 months into the fiscal year, so one more month to go, actually about 10 days. There's really nothing out of the ordinary to present to you that I haven't really stated in the past 11 months. We continue to look very positively on all the areas, quite honestly. Especially daycare. So we'll finish out the rest of the year, kind of become really more accurate in our budget projections for 228. We obviously have payroll that occurs after the fiscal year, and we pay bills that really relate to the current fiscal year. So the coming five weeks, really until the auditors come out for final field work, we'll continue to have expenses that go back to the current year. But everything looks good. This was the first year, I think, too, with the tax code changes that went into effect, where we started receiving the deferred taxes for the new year well in advance. I think a lot of people were prepaying, so we got the benefit of actually collecting a little bit earlier this year. It was about 4 or 5 weeks earlier than we typically would start to see that. So it's a good thing.
Commissioners, any questions related to finance?
Yeah.
Okay. Yes.
Carol, do you anticipate, because we residents experienced a big jump this last round with taxes in our property taxes due to the push to value our properties higher, do you expect more people will file
appeal?
Yes.
I think we saw a lot of appeals after 2008. I don't know how many we're really going to see. I mean, it was a reassessment year last year,
yeah.
So we are going to see that adjustment.
I'm curious how that will play out.
You know what? It's too hard to really tell.
Yeah.
I mean, we really won't see. I haven't noticed any increase.
Okay.
I've seen them taper off.
Oh, okay.
So.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Other questions from commissioners?
I noticed in the financial report, I thought it was a February date, that we did a lead assessment.
A lead paint.
Lead paint.
Yes. Chris, you want to speak to that?
Yeah, so we've discussed in the past when we did the roof on this building, we determined that some of the exterior wood did in fact have lead paint on it. So at the time, we kind of put a pin in that and decided that we're going to address that later. So what we did this year is we brought in a firm, ACG, to do an assessment of the whole building to figure out, we didn't want to go piecemeal without a plan. So they did a whole assessment, came out, measured things, and provided us a cost estimate for what the road looks like moving forward to get those things addressed. So as we discussed in the last finance committee, the whole meeting, I believe we're proposing $145,000 in next year's budget to make some of those corrections.
Some.
Yes.
It probably have to be two phases.
Really?
Yes.
Because there's also carpentry and stuff. It's,
mm-hmm.
it's not just paint.
Yeah.
Eight.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Other questions? Chris, there's some other things you might share with us with respect to some of the environmental testing you've been doing. You did air testing, I know.
Ceramics?
In relation to? Radon?
We are required by DCFS to provide a radon test in this facility every 3 years. So I believe this fiscal year was our third year in the testing, and as we have in the last 8 years, we passed it.
That's just normal.
That's just
operation
normal.
Operation to us.
Operation.
Yeah, but it's important that the community know that we're taking care of this and water as well.
Yes, there was a change in the way the state is looking at water sources for municipalities that park districts fall into that. So we did a lead assessment throughout the district. We found that we were in better shape than most districts this age as far as some of our fixtures go and whatnot. The state standard is much more stringent than the federal standard. There is still ongoing dialogue about where that state standard is going to end up because it may not be attainable for a lot of municipalities at this point, but basically they come in, they do the testing, they give you the results, and depending on the results, you either replace fixtures or you institute a flushing program, which is what we've done for any fixtures that we've had an issue with. This building was renovated in 2008. We didn't really have any problems here.
Okay. Terrific. Okay. Any other questions relating to funds? No. Okay. Well, I guess we're ready to talk about the Americans with Disabilities Act and the transition plan.
Thank you. I'd like to introduce John McGovern, probably the one of the nation's experts on ADA. He's from Recreation Accessibility Consultants. So as you're aware, we did district-wide ADA transition plan that his company provided us, and we asked John to come in and present a little bit of the findings and any questions you may have. John, turn it over to you.
Thanks, Lisa. And as a lot of people do, we've rebranded. We're no longer Recreation Accessibility Consultants.
Oh, okay. Sorry about that.
We are part of the WT Group, LLC, and we are their accessibility practice. And for 10 years, all we've done is help park districts and cities and counties and states and the occasional business meet the varying compliance requirements of the ADA. So I was going to talk a little bit about our project for the Glencoe Park District, but dive a little deeper into some of the ADA requirements, get the hook out whenever you need to, and move me away. In 2016, the district retained us, and the purpose of our work was to conduct an access audit of every one of your existing sites. That's a mandate that you have under the Americans with Disabilities Act. So it's not just something that touches new construction, it's every existing site no matter what year it was constructed. We work in teams of two, and we use checklists that incorporate the federal 2010 standards for accessible design, as well as the sometimes more stringent Illinois Accessibility Code. The Illinois requirements, for example, are more stringent when it comes to your downstairs service counter, the height of that or a portion of it can't be higher than 34 inches. The federal standard says 36 inches. Parking in Illinois is different. It's wider than the federal requirement. So we have to know both when we're doing work for the Glencoe Park District. So that's how we started. We look at every single thing. We don't assume that your architect and contractor got it right, so we evaluate everything and we leave you as part of the deliverables with checklists that show you everything that you did that we saw that was right, but also everything that we also saw that was an access deficit. In the end, we recommended a 6-year retrofit plan for you. The good news is you get to decide how many years it takes for the district to make its sites and facilities accessible. The bad news is you get to decide how many years it takes to make that decision. So you have to have a rationale in place for if you choose to go 8 to 10 years or if you choose to advance it to 4 years. Your total retrofit cost was just over $1 million at $1,130,000. Of course, as time goes by, some of those costs will change. And we also know that costs for retrofit work are affected by your relationship with the contractor, other demand that takes the contractor away from you, and so forth. So there are some variables that we can't address specifically. It's just a cost reference for planning purposes when we give you that figure. In the reports that we gave you for each site, we separated out and we identified the deficit and recommended a solution. We also applied the U.S. Department of Justice Program Access Test, and I'll talk briefly about that in the presentation. And again, in the end, it's the district's decision as to the pace that you're going to proceed at. And if we suggested retrofits at, I'm making up a name, John's Park, and you feel instead that at Lisa's Park it's more appropriate, that's fine. Just swap them out. Plans change all the time. So certainly everybody recognizes that. Everybody involved in developing the Americans with Disabilities Act guidelines recognize that as well. So let me jump into a little bit about what the ADA is. If you haven't heard this before, I hope it's informative. If you have, I'm going to go through this relatively quickly. Lisa, I'll give you the PowerPoint presentation on a thumb drive afterwards.
Thank you.
As well. So you can kind of tell from the title page that there's been a lot of debate since there's been a new sheriff in town in Washington, D.C. as to what's the impact going to be on the Americans with Disabilities Act. Is it still going to be as robust from an enforcement perspective as it was before? And we'll talk about that here. I'll spend a minute on the basic requirements, talk about the new administration and what impact they've had. We'll talk about some enforcement trends and compliance activity that is very, very current. A recent decision in January and a decision in November of 2017. I was asked to make a special emphasis and talk a little bit about trails and websites, so I'm going to do that as well and then leave you with some resources. And if you have questions, please just raise your hand and stop me and I'll address them. So the basics, one, do an access audit of your existing sites. The district has done that. Not everybody does that, by the way. There are 89,004 units of state and local government across the U.S., and I would venture that not more than 20,000 have met this very, very first and very most basic requirement. Second is do an access audit of your public-facing policies. Things as simple as, how do I sign in for public comment at a Board of Park Commissioners meeting? And if I'm a person who's deaf or hard of hearing, how do I get a sign language interpreter for you so that I can make comment? So simple things like that are something that each entity should be looking at. Also an access audit of programs to assure that if you have summer camps, that you also have summer camps that can include children who have a disability. Fourth and fifth on this slide, appoint an employee as an ADA coordinator. That's an absolute. You don't have to go out and hire a new person. This is typically, I think in the vernacular, other duties is assigned. There is a great credential for this. There's a certified ADA coordinator credential that was created by a national network, and it provides staff, in particular local governments, with a good perspective on everything from construction to policy to programs and so forth. Bottom on this slide is that you're required to have a process where if I live in Glencoe and I've come to register for a program and maybe staff said, no, we're not going to provide a higher staff ratio for your son who's on the autism spectrum. Well, you don't really want me to call Washington, D.C. or go to federal district court. You want me instead to call your ADA coordinator, come in, sit down, and resolve it with a handshake. And it never makes the newspaper, and it saves you $100,000 in legal fees.
John, just a brief question. I really more out of curiosity, because I gather we have done the audits that are required here, but if only roughly a quarter of the units of government have done it, does that mean three quarters of the units of government are just like out of compliance, and what's the consequence?
Yeah.
I worked in local government for a long time, and I think all local governments fit into three categories. One category is the group that's always the first to go out and do things. So that's the first to build a skate park. That's the first to build a dog park. That's the first to build a disc golf park. The second category are the watchers. They watch the people in the first category. And two or three years later, they cherry-pick the things that the people in the first category did, and then they go and follow in their footsteps. The third category, and we all know somebody in the third category, whether it's in local government or in our personal lives. They're the people that you kind of have to drag unwillingly to accomplish whatever the task is that they're required to accomplish. I don't know the numbers here. I don't know how many people really fit into that third category. I think most people want to do this, but for fiscal reasons have been afraid to do it. I know that we've talked to, we've had clients with a much, much, much larger dollar amount of retrofits that they were looking at in the $10 to $15 million range. And sure, there's some trepidation about how the heck are we going to come up with $10 to $15 million in a short period of time, but how do you eat an elephant? You do it one bite at a time. The longer you put it off, the less likely your costs are going to be low. I think adding to that is that relief under the ADA is injunctive. So if I live in Glencoe and you haven't done your access audit and I want to do something about it and I file a complaint, the worst that can happen in court is that the court tells you to do the access audit. And then you'll pay my attorney's fees, and if we're in federal district court, you're certainly going to incur your own attorney's fees. So for some, I think in local government, they might feel like, okay, there's not a great incentive for me to go out and do this, aside from the fact that it's the right thing to do. Long answer. Did it help, though? Other basics, support inclusive participation. You certainly do that through your partner, NSSRA. Compel contractors and volunteers to comply. This is kind of an issue, in particular in recreation operations. If you contract out for Zumba instructors or personal trainers or anything else, the contract has to say, I, John McGovern, while I teach Zumba for the Glencoe Park District, will not discriminate on the basis of disability. And so if that Zumba instructor says, I'm not going to take a boy on the autism spectrum in my class, that's an instant problem because that contractor really represents you. You know your public, of course, doesn't know your contract. Heck, they don't know the difference between you and the school district. So that's an important thing for you to address with contractors. It also applies to professional service contractors. If you're interviewing architects and engineers, hold their feet to the fire. And don't just ask them if they know the ADA requirements. Tell them to demonstrate in their plan where they've met the requirements of the 2010 standards. Service animals is a part of the ADA as well. Service animals can be, of course, dogs. Everybody knows that, but also miniature horses. So there are really specific requirements that the animal has to meet. One, it has to be housebroken, and two, it has to be under control. But making it more difficult for you, staff can't say you with the service animal, your dog has to have a vest on it because a vest can't be required. You can look for is it under control and is it housebroken. The third test is that it has to do something that relates to my disability. So a pure comfort animal, I come to your 4th of July event and I bring my dog just because I'm more comfortable in crowds with my dog. I'm not sure that's a disability. But if I'm a guy in a power chair and I can't bend over to get my cell phone, which we all are tethered to, but my dog is in my lap, he jumps out of my lap, puts it in his mouth, and jumps back in my lap and gives me my phone back, that's a task that relates to my disability. So some staff training and awareness is helpful on this subject. One of the other newer requirements is permitting the use of other power-driven mobility devices and sites. So if I wanted to come here to this meeting and if I had a progressively worsening neurological condition and I rode in here on a Segway, then you'd permit that. And I'd be here at the podium standing on my Segway. I wouldn't be walking around using up the energy that I had. And if I wanted to take a golf cart to that same 4th of July event, I could do that. If I wanted to take a riding mower with the blades retracted or off, I could do that as well. So again, some discussion about this, and I'm not going to say that you have to have a policy on other power-driven mobility devices and service animals either, but you certainly have to have a level of awareness that they're permitted, and I'd probably suggest you want to welcome people through your website and your publications. The bottom is the second half of our deliverables, create a transition plan. It's just a phase schedule for how you're going to implement the retrofit recommendations that we gave you or for others that you determine rise to the top. A couple of other requirements here. Make sure all new design and construction is accessible. That's really clear in the Title II regulation. Adhere to the 2010 standards or the Illinois Accessibility Code, which in 2019 will be more stringent in many areas than the federal requirements. As a smart practice, adhere to the guidelines that are in the pipe that aren't going to be issued under this presidential administration. And those address trails, viewing areas, picnic areas. So we all know what an accessible picnic table looks like, right?
Mm-hmm.
Do you need to wait on area code 202 to tell you what it looks like? You don't have to. There are already three designs out on the market that you can buy or make in your own shop. And regarding websites, you've probably seen the many, many, many articles about websites and businesses being sued about their website not being accessible. There is a guideline. The administration killed it, but it is still out and available. Your website should certainly meet the website content accessibility guideline 2.0 version. I'm not the tech guy in our shop, but I think most 19-year-olds would be able to tell you that it's not hard to do. Our own IT guy said it took him 2 hours to make our site compliant. So it's not a difficult or costly endeavor. I thought about not including this, but it's really important to do this. I want to make it clear I'm not talking about politics here. There's a big difference in my mind between politics and governance. But there's a new reality in Washington, D.C. And I'm going to stick to the facts here. There's plenty of opinion floating around about this, but he is my president. He is your president. He is the leader of the greatest country in the free world. He believes regulations hurt business. He believes regulations hurt local governments because they're an unfunded mandate. And he thinks that if businesses and governments are left alone, and markets, that they will gravitate toward doing the right thing and regulations won't be a necessity. There have been a handful of changes that have happened, and one of those has been some significant changes at the U.S. Department of Justice. DOJ is the big dog when it comes to ADA regulations and ADA enforcement. They interpret the ADA requirements by issuing technical assistance letters. They've got a great hotline that I gave Lisa as a resource sheet for you. They're really, in particular, good at the hotline on policy issues. So if you're wondering, do we need to have a sign language interpreter at every single public event that we have? Call the Department of Justice and at least get their advice on it. It's kind of like calling the IRS during tax season. They do have some really good technical assistance papers on the website. Everything from service animals to other power driven mobility devices. So I would commend you to their website. I can tell you that 10 technical assistance papers were taken off last month. So the Department of Justice had made the decision that those were unnecessary and duplicative of other guidance. So it might behoove you to look sooner rather than later at the website, because some of these are done. The other federal agencies, so in particular for you, the Department of Interior has been given the status of designated agency. So if I want to file a complaint against the Park District, I can reach out to your ADA coordinator. I can go to federal district court. I can also call area code 202 and talk to the Department of Interior Office of Civil Rights, because they know about recreation issues. If they think the complaint is worth pursuing because it will affect more than just one entity, then they'll come out and investigate, invite you to participate in settlement discussions. If they ever invite you, I think the appropriate answer is yes. So DOJ kind of controls those entities. Department of Interior has this office. Department of Education has it for schools. Department of Transportation has it. So it makes sense that you have some consistency in the responses from DOT, DOE, and DOI. And Department of Justice is supposed to ride herd on all of those entities so that if you ask a sign language interpreter a question of one, you're going to get the same answer when you go to the next one later on. Last but not least, DOJ used to have a really significant presence at conferences. They would have staff, enforcement staff, come and speak about, here's how we view this particular issue regarding the Americans with Disabilities Act. That has not happened that much in 2017. So I'd like to believe that that's just a function of there have been a lot of staff vacancies that haven't been filled yet at DOJ, and we are hopeful that this will pick up again. So what's really at risk for you? There are a couple of recreation things here. The second bullet point, adaptive golf carts. I know that's not an issue so much for you. And accessible fitness machines, that's an issue for you. But certainly clarifying the requirements for trails, picnic areas, beaches, that's not yet a final and enforceable standard. There's clearly guidance, but it's not a standard. And other outdoor developed areas like routes from your pavilion on the beach to another asset at the beach.
John, I'm sorry, what do you mean by at risk?
At risk?
Yeah.
right now, Title II, the regulation issued by the Department of Justice, tells you that every program that you have has to be accessible. So don't think program as in a recreation activity. Think of it more like an opportunity the district provides. So let's use the beach as an example. You're required to make beach access except something that happens. But the guideline that would have told you what beach access looks like has been held or killed. So you have to make it accessible, but when you go to look at what accessible beaches really mean, there's nothing that's final and enforceable. So it puts you in a difficult position. You're told on the one hand, hey, this is something you got to do, and then you're told on the other hand, but we're not going to help you by telling you exactly what it means. Does that make sense?
John, does best practice help to protect you in that situation? You make some effort?
It does. So earlier on I said, you know, we would still, and we did in our reports to you, encouraged you to follow the evolving guideline. When we finished our report in 2016, it was literally going to be published as part of the standard in 2 or 3 months, and that just never happened. So certainly as a smart practice, you know, always do more. The ADA just sets the floor. It doesn't set the ceiling. So we always encourage you, and we did in our reports, to exceed the minimum requirements. We've talked a little bit about this. I'm going to zip through these. Lisa, you have these. If there is a dying wish to talk more about federal district court. I will talk about what's defined as a win, though, here. If I do file a complaint in court or with the Department of Interior, I win if the Glencoe Park District stops doing something it was doing, starts doing something it wasn't doing, or changes the way it does something. And, of course, those have to relate to disability. So it's a pretty broad definition. And if I win at all, you wind up paying my attorney's fees, which are often much more expensive than the fix itself. There's a good Illinois decision about an after-school program where the cost that was at dispute was for a part-time staff member to work after school, and it was about $7,000 for a 9-month program. They spent $350,000 in legal fees, and they wound up making it $357,000 because they had to hire that staff person back to keep them in the program. So I know you'd rather find some other place to spend $350,000. Couple of enforcement trends out of the administration, and these are intended to be factual. And this isn't unusual. When President Obama was elected, the number of Office of Civil Rights staff increased by about 130 people. As President Trump has been elected, the number of enforcement staff in the Office of Civil Rights has dropped by about 121 people. So this is the typical yin and yang that we see whenever there's a change in administration. The Department of Justice, though, so far in 2017, has been a little slower to intervene and to add their voice when there have been disputes. And some of the new settlement agreements do not always include language that says that the settlement agreement is enforceable in federal district court. That's an important part of the settlement process, and some of them just don't include that language. There are a couple decisions that give some guidance, though. City and County of Denver did not do what you did. They did not do an access audit. The Department of Justice knocked on their door about 4 years ago, and this was just published January 8th of 2018, and it compels Denver to make retrofits at sites that were newly constructed. That means anything past 1992. It compels Denver to go out and review all of their other existing sites, which, of course, they had the obligation to do already. It compels Denver to specifically address polling places, domestic abuse shelters, as well as parks and recreation sites. And unlike you, since you voluntarily undertook your access audit and transition plan requirement, that means you can kind of set your own time frame here. Denver has to do all of this in a 3-year period. So we have a client that's in a similar situation in Iowa City. Just a tiny piece of our work for that city, they had about 4,000 curb ramps that they had constructed since 1992. What percent of the curb ramps do you think were compliant? Just take a shot.
12.
12% I got. Less than 1%.
Oh, God.
So think of the literally hundreds of millions of dollars in concrete and detectable warnings. Let's not forget the staff time and the contractor time that really might have just as well been put into a garbage mound and burnt. So it's all gone. So this came out in January. This is, I think, indicative that the Department of Justice is still going to pursue the same template. The settlement agreement looks just like the Iowa one, just like the Arizona one, just like the New Mexico one, and so forth.
So let's say you have an 8-year plan, and 3 years in you get a complaint about something that's not, you're not going to fix until year 5. Are you covered because of that?
You're going to say, we're acting in good faith. We did this voluntarily. Every year of our plan, we have spent X amount of dollars, and you're going to have an Excel spreadsheet, and you're going to check things off. And could you be forced to accelerate something? You could, but then there's got to be a rationale for it. Like, the retrofits that you made at the site are still not compliant. That's something that we see from time to time. But if you have a plan and you're acting in good faith to expend resources or allocate resources and then expend them, you've got a great defense. Again, you mentioned daycare, so this was just coincidental, but this is one of the other newer decisions or settlement agreements that came out last fall, and this is Bar T, I would come up with a different name if I were them, but it's Bar T year-round programs for children or for kids. Bar T is a not-for-profit. They're still subject to ADA Title III, not ADA Title II as you are. And they terminated a boy from programs who was on the autism spectrum because of disability-related behavior. And they terminated him without ever considering what are the things that we can do to moderate his behavior. Can we put a behavior plan in place? Can we do an assessment? Can we observe him in other settings, like school, and see how they manage his behavior there? Can we increase our staff ratio? All the things that you do through your partnership with NSSRA. And they didn't do any of that. And in the settlement agreement, the Department of Justice said, ensuring that child care providers do not discriminate on the basis of disability is an issue of general public importance. So this wasn't just a settlement agreement. It was an opportunity for DOJ to say what they thought was important. The settlement agreements are all posted on the Department of Justice website, so that message hopefully has gone out to daycare providers across the U.S. You probably heard a little bit recently about House Resolution 620. Every year since 1992, when the ADA became effective, a member of Congress from either Texas, Florida, or California, I think they had a deal where they would just swap it every year, introduced a bill that would, for businesses, change the tolling of disputes. Businesses, I'll just say Starbucks because I stopped there on the way here. Starbucks has had since 1992 an ongoing annual obligation to remove barriers so that I can enter, go to the counter, order, go to the restroom while I wait for my order, come back and sit at a table and enjoy my latte. They get a $5,000 tax credit every single year, and they get up to $15,000 in tax deductions every single year. So over 25 years, that's $20,000. Who's good at math?
Carol.
Is that $500,000? I think it is. So this bill says, nah, forget about the last 25 years. If you're that Starbucks and John comes in a mobility device and wants to order and the counter's too high or it can't get in the door, then John's got to give you, within 60 days, a detailed list of why he couldn't use Starbucks. Then you, the Starbucks owner, have, during that 60-day period, time to respond, and then you have 120 days on top of that to show substantial progress towards making the retrofit. No one knows what substantial progress is. Does that mean that you went to an online catalog of how you could widen your door and you've gotten quotes, or does that mean you started the work, or does that mean you finished the work? Nobody really knows. So this passed the House Judiciary Committee this summer. It passed the House of Representatives late last week. The next stop is the Senate. I didn't bring my crystal ball. It needs 60 votes in the Senate. I'm not even gonna try to guess how that's gonna happen. And then if it passes in the Senate, of course, it goes on to President Trump for his consideration. So this is an interesting piece of legislation. Like I said, every year since the ADA has been a law, something like this has been introduced, and this is the first time it's had enough votes to make it out of the House. So we'll watch and see what happens. I want to make it really clear, it has absolutely no impact on local governments. And candidly, it's not crafted very well for businesses. Businesses can still be sued under this for not having an accessible website. Businesses can still be sued, the same Starbucks, for not having a large print menu. So all of those violations are still something that could arise in a complaint. A little bit of regulatory activity. I know you're interested in trails, so this was a good coincidence as well. This is a real-life hyperlink, Lisa, to the I've got to get the name right. The current regulatory plan and the unified agenda of regulatory and deregulatory action. That's a mouthful. And you can follow all the regulations that are pending at that hyperlink. So part of the issue here is that, and this is not fake news, 1,579 regulations have been affected by this. 635 were just flat out withdrawn. That includes outdoor recreation, guidance on trails and campsites and beaches. 244 were made inactive, and 700 were added to the long-term list, which means they have no funding. The departments are still saying they're an issue that they're exploring, but there's no funding for them. So they're probably effectively dead. The rationale for this is that this eliminates regulations that are ineffective, duplicative, or obsolete, thereby enabling economic growth, innovation, and the protection of individual liberty. Let's talk a second about trails. The trail guideline that you would follow is the one for federally owned and operated sites that is final and enforceable for federal agencies and was issued in 2013. It was put together by a consensus group of state and local government land managers, federal land managers, advocacy groups, citizens groups, safety groups, a little bit of everything. So does every trail have to look like this? The answer clearly is no. That said, every trail can't look like these. The general rule of thumb we use at our firm is that a trail like the one at the top, if that were still grass covered and were really more of an animal path, then it's not an improved route. And we'd say that it's not subject to the access requirements. But a month later, me and my neighbors come to Lisa and we say, you know, it'd be really nice if you would mow the trail and maybe trim along the edges, and maybe could you refill the surface so it doesn't wash out as much when it rains. So the more steps you take like that, then the sooner you're going to trigger a requirement that that trail be considered as an accessible trail. The language in the trail guideline tells you that there are four reasons that you can depart from the technical requirements for making a trail accessible. One is naturally occurring very steep terrain. So the example I always use is a trail along a Lake Michigan bluff where, sure, you could wrap a concrete route or retaining wall around it to support it, but it's not going to last. So for reasons like that, or a trail up a mountain, those are things you're not going to have to do. Second is a trail that goes through a culturally sensitive or historic site. Third is a trail that goes through an area where there are protected species or plant life. And fourth is a trail that would go through an area where there are construction prohibitions. For example, you can't bring in dirt from other areas. I don't think that's so much of an issue for you, but certainly the first one applies, and maybe even the protected species piece does as well. There's some guidance in the trails about, in the trail guideline about what percentage of your trail you should strive for. So if you have a trail network, ideally you should strive for 30% of it being compliant. We also tell people to make this a common sense approach, much like skiing. If I go to a ski area, there are green runs, blue runs, and double black diamond runs. So make your trail system like that if you can. And tell the public about it. Put it on your website, put it in your print materials. And if I use a mobility device, maybe I'm going to stick to the equivalent of the green runs. Maybe I'll venture off onto a blue run, but I'm probably not going to go on the double black diamond trails that you have. So you have a fair amount of flexibility here, especially since it's not final and enforceable for you. There are some good examples. We have a couple of clients that we could refer you to that have extensive trail networks in mountainous areas or in lake areas. So if and when that would help, just holler. We talked a little bit about websites. It's the same kind of issue as outdoor recreation. You're required to make your communications accessible. So everything from your print materials, your audit results, to your website, to your registration forms, all of those have to be in a format that's available to people who either can't see. Well, let's just leave it at that. The website content accessibility guidelines are really effective here. That's a hyperlink to those as well. We have a couple of contractors that do website work all the time, and I'd be happy to refer you to them. Just a couple more things here. What was withdrawn? Just go to the bottom. One of the things, you can pick up any newspaper or go to any browser for news, and you're going to see an article about somebody removing somebody else who used a service animal. So at the bottom, one of the guidance documents at the DOJ website that's been taken off the website is commonly asked service animal questions. And at the top, one of the other guidance documents was for businesses, and it's an ADA business brief on service animals. So I'm going to ask you if anybody can tell me what that little image is on the screen.
Flying pig.
You can't take pigs on planes, okay.
Actually, that's a good thing. You can't take a peacock on a plane either, right?
And you can't take a peacock either.
You can't take pheasants. Or some kind of bird.
Yeah, so if you wanted.
Peacocks.
He's a performance artist, though. I suspect that there was more to this than you think. But you get the $5 reward. So that's a flying pig. So there's a restaurant in Manhattan called When Pigs Fly. and they refused to allow a Marine who was injured in Iraq to come in and eat barbecue with his friends and bring his service animal. He has post-traumatic stress disorder, and they refused to allow him in. So is there still a need for information like this? There's another settlement agreement that just posted the other day about a VFW hall that did the same thing, refused to allow a guy in with post-traumatic stress disorder. So I think there's ample evidence that these technical assistance documents are still needed, but I'm at the Department of Justice, and they are gone as of late December. So this is, I guess this is my part of this presentation that is opinion, it is not fact. This is kind of where I'm worried that the Department of Justice is headed, that we're going to turn into the Wild Wild West as far as ADA enforcement. And I know that from when I worked in local government, when I worked in NSSRA, I liked having a rule that we all knew and we were all clear about, and we could all figure out how to reach the end of that together. We can't figure that out today. So to kind of go back to your question, I think a lot of this is acting in good faith. We've given you pretty specific, very specific recommendations for retrofit. We suggested a 6-year plan. You make it an 8-year plan, that's fine. No one's going to come and take you to court and force you to do something. They may force you to address one retrofit specifically, but your entire plan is unlikely to get shelved. Couple of resources for you, and they're on the handout as well. DOJ is an excellent source still for policy. They've done a good job of trying to learn more about local government. If you have a bricks and mortar question, I would not go to the Department of Justice. I would go to the U.S. Access Board. That's the very small federal agency that creates all of the original accessibility guidelines. There's another group, I did not put it on your list, called the Disability and Business Technical Assistance Centers. There are 10 of them across the U.S. If you dial 800-949-4232, your phone will direct you to the one that's closest to you. And for Illinois, that's at University of Illinois, Chicago campus. They lean a little bit left. They're a good second opinion. So if you call the Access Board, go ahead and call them if you want. But they're going to lean a little left. We have at our shop, me, I've got career experience in local government. I'm licensed in Illinois as an attorney. There are only 2 states that have a professional accessibility credential. There is not a national credential. One of them is California, no surprise there. The other is Texas, that is a surprise. And we have one person that's certified in both states. Actually, one person's in one state and the other person's in the other state. And then we have 2 people who are certified ADA coordinators. Over the last 10 years, we've probably made 950,000 specific retrofit recommendations. So if we can help you or point you toward products or give you a sense of what the trends are, we'd be happy to do that. And I'll stop.
Very good. Thank you.
Can I answer more questions? Did I exhaust you?
No.
Questions from the board? I've been involved in a lot of environmental litigation, and there's some parallels here. The most important thing to my mind is what they call an affirmative defense, which is there is at least if you've demonstrated that you've, in good faith, made some progress toward the whole goal, the codes have generally been pretty favorable. But you've got to demonstrate that you've done some things. I'm sure we're going to be checking in with staff to see how we can react to your proposals. Certainly, we don't have the resources or the budget to do everything at once.
No, nobody does.
And we'll have to kind of work our way through that. Do you want to say something?
A couple of questions. First is, it's so perplexing to me how much of this is we recommend or, we think you should strive for. Everything seems so open to interpretation, which is confusing. It's hard for me to think, let's put our money into this and do this, when you think, yeah, you know, things may change 3 years from now, God willing, things will change and then it'll be different. Maybe the rules will be different, and we've made these retrofits that will no longer be acceptable. It almost feels like you're better off waiting, in a sense, because, you know, so help me understand why that, and when you say 8 years, how about 10 years?
Sure.
Okay.
Couple things. You've got a couple of items in there. Let me talk about the length of time. The Department of Justice, since 1992, the regulation has not changed. It has said you are to make all of your retrofits occur within a 3-year period. I think that's unreasonable. It's difficult enough to get a budget put together, and that takes up an entire fiscal year. And then that means you've only got 2 years left to make all your retrofits. It's just an impossible target. I think it was very unrealistic of the Department of Justice. But they've chosen, they've received thousands of comments about that particular issue, and they've chosen not to address it. Instead, their advice to local governments is that you should make the retrofits occur as soon as is possible. From a planning perspective, that's just not helpful. So we've always recommended for entities your size that somewhere, and it depends on your resources and your other projects, but somewhere between a 5-year to 10-year window is appropriate. I meant what I said earlier, though. The good news is you get to pick the number of years. The bad news is you get to pick the number of years. So you've got to have a real clear plan and rationale for why you pick 9 years. And don't take the equivalent of a pension holiday. Don't take an access holiday where 1 year you don't make any retrofits.
Okay.
And it's really got to be an ongoing process for you. Second is, you don't want to wait because we're Illinois. So the Illinois Accessibility Code, and I alluded to this earlier, was rewritten in 2016 and 2017. And it includes all the things that are stalled in Washington. So it will include beach guidance. It will include picnic areas. It will include public rights of way, which right now is not final and enforceable. It will include trails, and that's going to be issued in 2019. It ran into some Springfield-related issues last year, and so it did not come out. But I fully expect it to come out in 2019. So by waiting until then, and really it's already out. It's printed. You know exactly the content that's in there. So why wait a year for cost to rise for your retrofits? Start addressing it sooner rather than later.
One specific question. It was 0.51 under athletic fields, and it just jumped out because I thought, oh, wait, how did this happen? Make corrections cited to Melvin Berlin Park. Athletic fields, so a project we finished within the last couple of years. It's surprising that there could be some issues with that field in terms of ADA. Is it a simple little thing?
Could I follow up on that? Do the designers have any liability for that?
They do, but my guess is, you said the last couple years, I'm sure this is a project that's closed, isn't it?
Yes.
I said specific recommendations are parking recommendations in the village right-of-way that go along with the park.
Oh.
And I believe,
so it's not an accessible route?
Yeah, I believe it also had to do, when you came out and out of the park, we were still under construction. So I believe it has to do specifically the number of van accessible spaces that the village provides in the permitted parking area that's there.
Sure.
So there's
so
some.
So that's a parking issue.
Right.
So John's, you know, one of the things I think is really important when you hear about corrections, you know, not every correction is a $500,000 correction. Sometimes it's take that mirror and move it down 2 inches. That bar that the contractor installed next to the toilet, it's actually 2 inches too low, move it up.
Yeah.
So as we, you know, have really made great strides in our master plan process in addressing many of these things, I mean, simply put, even down in daycare, some of the recommendations were, you know, move that desk that's in front of the door 4 feet to the left. Those types of things. So we've actively managed this plan in a lot of ways. So I think we're lucky in the sense that our infrastructure is in the condition that we really haven't been able to sit back and wait on a lot of stuff. So we've had to pull the trigger on playground replacements and ball fields and, you know, renovating the shower room for the fitness center. So as we've pulled the trigger on a lot of those infrastructure projects, we've factored in. We always provide John's assessment to the architect and come back and make our best guess to make sure that in the best practices what we're doing is right.
Right.
So in our conclusion report to you, we identified about 1,302 access deficits. I'm going to guess that I'm going to guess that probably 500 of them are what Chris just described, and I've got two examples in this room to show you. We call these the low-hanging fruit. They're things that you can do with current human and fiscal resources. And you can look toward either door. Both of those garbage cans block an operating mechanism. So if I were a person using a wheelchair, I would not be able to have free maneuvering clearance to get to that phone. And I think that's just a light switch, but that garbage can is in the way. So that's such a simple thing. That's a room layout grid that you do once and train staff on, and you've just wiped off two of the, you're now down to 1,300. But a lot of these, they're so simple for you to address. There is a way, since it's an Excel spreadsheet, you can sort it by cost as well. And when you do that, you're going to see that 500 of these cost no dollars and only staff time, which is still significant, but it's not a dollar outlay.
Right.
I wanted to go back to one of the other questions that you had, too. Every year since 1992, the Department of Justice has had the opportunity to clarify recurring sites and what you need to do. So if you have 15 sports fields, is there a ratio for how many should be accessible? If you have 15 playgrounds, is there a ratio for how many should be accessible? And they have purposely chosen not to do that. They've said, we think this should be a local decision. You know your resources, you know your community, you know your own demand. So you make the decision about what percentage of those similar or recurring sites you're going to retrofit. I've always recommended that you choose at least a minimum of one-third. So if you have 15, we strive to find five or six that we're going to recommend to you that either are accessible or with modest retrofits could be made accessible. We've had about 10 clients that have been either in federal district court or at DOI or DOE or state enforcement agencies, and every time that one of three approach has been upheld. So we know it works.
That's sort of similar to your skiing.
It is, very much so. And it's similar, coincidentally, to the 30% of trail that is in the trail guide. So again, treat it as a minimum. We had a client in DuPage County that said, we want 50% of our playgrounds to be made accessible. So that's what their plan did, and that's what they implemented. And they finished all their work a couple years ago, and 50% of the playgrounds are fully accessible. So that's a good way to do it. Always think a little bit beyond the menu.
Can I ask a question? First, I want to say, John, this is really helpful to me. I'm a relatively new commissioner, so this introduction was really helpful.
Great, thanks.
And I want to thank Lisa, because I think we asked as commissioners for John to do this, so thank you for following up on that. My question really is perhaps one of ignorance, and I thought I read this carefully, but I may have missed it, so apologies if everyone else knows the answer. But are we 3 years into an implementation plan for this program that John's company has suggested, or have we just gotten this and we're now trying to deal with, you know, how are we going to budget and plan for this in our 6 or 8 year program? I'm a little in the dark.
Yeah, we're about 3 years in, would you say?
Delivered, I believe, to us in early 2017, so we're really in year two. But
year two, but we had a one before.
We had a portion of the transition plan that we'd done previously, and when Lisa brought me in to kind of do an assessment of all the parks, we talked and decided that it was the right time to do a transition plan for everything.
Perfect.
So we brought John back to finish the transition plan for the entire park district, but we're as again, I said with our sites, a lot of our infrastructure is in the condition that we've had to make decisions based on not just accessibility, but safety. So as we've made those decisions, you know, not every piece of playground equipment we have on every playground that we build is accessible, but we have accessible routes of travel. We've really gone and executed the first, you know, year one, year two, I mean, the parking projects, the playground projects, Berlin Field, we've made major improvements at all of those sites. And we go back and then notate that in the transition plan to show, you know, hey, we didn't just take this document and put it on the shelf and collect dust with it.
So this is a follow-up question.
No, I was just going to say, well, Chris is exactly right. What we did is approach all of our new projects, all of our failing infrastructure, and make sure those are all ADA compliant, along with low-hanging fruit as we go through the plan.
So this report that was in our packet is not new, or it is new?
2017 is when it was presented to us.
Okay.
So
this is really just for our benefit as an education.
Yes, yes,
okay.
Yeah. And it was planned to bring it all along to the board. It was just the finding the time to do it.
Okay.
So it's just the summaries, what you guys have.
Yeah.
John's assessment is hundreds and hundreds.
We have big binders.
Clearly, it's got to be 1,302.
We pay by the page.
So do we have, as a park district, a 6 or 8 year timeline and a compliance plan that says, you know, we're going to tackle this 12% of the improvements each of the next 6 years?
We don't have one yet. Yeah, we've been just looking at our new projects and seeing what we can afford, but that is something that's on our to-do list.
I mean, I think our three-year plan that we've worked on with the board is really the bones of that.
That is the bones of it, but we don't have an official one to say by this year we're going to have all these ones done, but we've been doing it through
also,
our capital project plan.
Long-term plans to do things at different assets, different. We wouldn't retrofit those because we're going to 5 years, 8, 6 years, 7, 8 years out, going to be doing something, say, at Lakefront Park.
And that's a smart use of your resources.
Exactly.
If we've deemed you at a site and it's on your capital improvement plan for 2022,
right.
Well, then if we suggested it be 2020, push it to 2022. There's absolutely no reason why you can't do that.
And that's why we have that capital improvement plan that goes out further, because
right.
We are addressing some of those.
Yeah.
And we do look at them and say which ones we feel are more that we should address immediately. For example, the playground. That's why we recommend phase two of the playground to address that violation. So
we do.
The parking lot.
There are other factors that we could add to our analysis. We have had some clients who make the decision about which sites they're going to address first based on the rate or level of usage. We don't try to gather that information from you because we know it's a metric that you can apply yourself. It's really, I don't want to say it's irrelevant to our task. Our task is to look at the site and tell you where it's not compliant.
Right.
It's really your task to then blend that with everything else that you do.
No, you guys can follow that thought. I was hoping to.
So, at some level, I feel like there's some risk here because John's talking about how you should have an explicit plan, whether it's 5 years or 10 years, and I feel like we don't have one other than we're gradually addressing stuff. And related to that, I suppose, is an idea that, well, we probably should have some sense of, okay, well, there's 1,302 violations. Why are we this year and deferring these 200 for 5 more years?
Well, you're right. We do have to have a more formal plan that says we're going to do these in these years, but we have addressed a lot of those in our long-range capital plan. So we have, as a board, discussed the projects we want to do over the next, you know,
right. I'm not suggesting
5 years, but right. Exactly. So we do have to, now that we have the document, we got the document, probably in the summer, and so we just have to develop a plan now based on it.
And actually, this conversation helps me understand why you often say, for instance, with the parking lot, we need to make this ADA accessible. And it always sort of resonates oddly to us. It's like, oh, there's lots of spots for people
right.
to park, and now I realize why you push for certain things.
Yeah.
So this
That's
has been
good.
Helpful, very helpful.
I have a question about that. Let's, for example, let's stick the basic premise was if we have been conscientiously working the best of our ability to bring things compliant to our understanding of the 2010 program, with your understanding of the state's 2019 program that is going to come forward, regardless of what directions Washington goes with the current wind, are you seeing the 2019 program be further enhancements and developments of things that have been done in 2010? Or are you seeing some contradictions? Have we made moves we thought were in the best effort, good faith, and yet we're seeing things develop and they're contradicting efforts we've already made?
No. The state product, it's written. You can see it at the website now. And it incorporates everything that's hanging in the wind in Washington right now.
Right.
So when it's published, it'll be the Illinois Accessibility Code, and it will address beaches, it will address trails, it will address websites. So it will be by far the more stringent piece for you to follow.
Okay.
So it's not, I shouldn't speak.
But the things that we have done in the past aren't contraindicated.
No.
The direction is simply being better understood and better developed as we move forward.
The content, I served on the federal advisory committees that wrote the outdoor recreation recommendations. The content from 1999 when we finished our work to what Illinois is going to pick up finally is word for word what we did. There's been no change in that for 20 years. The Army Corps of Engineers, the Forest Service, the Department of Interior, as they adopted it for federal use in 2013, no change from what we had recommended in 1999. So this is kind of like, this goes back to your question to a certain extent. This is kind of like knowing that in 2019 you're going to have to take a test. And we're going to give you every question on the test, and we're going to give you every answer to every question on the test. It's there. I don't see a change.
So we can do our triage, or continue to do our triage, as Chris and staff has been doing every time they visit an asset, a facility, a product, or a program,
correct,
and continue to build our understanding of how we need to develop them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, have tough love conversations with your design professionals and your contractors and make sure that they are fully aware that you're going to hold their retainage or make them come back and dig it up and redo it if it's not compliant.
Chris does a good job at that.
any other questions from the board?
I just want to circle back in terms of liability, Dunblane.
Okay.
You know, since we have this thing that was delivered in 2017, I'm not sensing that there's a burning platform here that we have to do something in the next 30 days, but I don't know what an appropriate timeline is, Lisa, but it seems like sometime in the next year or something.
Probably it's a goal for this. I had it on as a goal for this year for Chris and I and Carol and Bobby to work on that, those. A long-range 10-year plan and when we're going to do that.
We did get a 10-year plan within the master plan that they take in. The architects and engineers from their firm's professional opinion, so it didn't necessarily directly have the transition plan, but there was a 10-year.
It did, but that's for our capital projects. He's talking about the 1,000 whatever thousand that we indicate when we're going to do those. That's what he's talking about, which we can. So we have two off. So there's actually a lot of them that we've already been working on, but they're that aren't on paper that we could say, see, check, we did those. So we'll work on that document.
Thank you.
Okay.
Great.
So, are we
very nice, John. Thank you.
Are we depressed enough?
Thanks a lot for the invite, and I appreciate the
conversation. Oh, it was very good.
Thanks always, much appreciated.
Okay. Thanks, John.
Okay.
Okay. I think we're about ready for staff reports at this point. I do want to thank you for the energy for the ADA. A presentation, and you said you're going to come back later with what I'll call an implementation plan.
Yep, that'll be on the goal. It's going to be my goals for next year.
Okay.
So it take one pass along. That's just some of the information he he indicated, so just for your knowledge.
Oh, okay, yeah, in case we have a burning 88 question.
Which, if you have a burning 88 question, just send it my way.
Okay.
And I'll find out the answer for you, save you some time, so.
Okay, so, staff reports.
Okay, so, Carol, do you have anything to add to your report?
Nothing really than what's already stated in there. It's just busy time, end of the budget year here, and budget time, end of the fiscal year. Nothing really to add.
Any questions for Carol?
As a reminder, we'll be voting on the budget document at our next meeting.
Right.
Yes.
In March.
March.
Yes.
Correct.
Yes.
March 20th.
Okay.
Okay. Bobby, do you have anything to add to your report?
Nothing major other than Matt Walker started today as the new beach manager. So
exciting.
That's really exciting. It's in the report.
We could talk about Watts a little bit. Do you want to talk about Watts a little bit?
Sure.
This wonderful weather we're having.
Sure.
And
staff is working really hard to repair any damage to the ice. Obviously, it's been 62 degrees all day and raining. So staff's been working really hard to get that rainwater off the top of the ice, try to protect it, rebuild it tonight. They did notice tonight at 6 o'clock when I talked to them that there was some refreezing going on. We'd build the ice up to a level knowing that we were going to lose some. So they're just working really hard to keep it as good as they can given the weather conditions, and we keep watching it. It keeps changing.
So we'll judge it day by day. We're supposed to go till March 1st, but we'll keep on watching the weather forecast. What we won't do is if it melts down to the point where we have to rebuild ice, we won't do that. The cost-benefit ratio is not there. So they're doing a good job trying to keep it open as long as they can. But the weather forecast this weekend looks a little warm, too. So.
Is it the 1st or the
4th? 4th. I'm sorry, 4th. Whatever that Sunday is.
Yeah.
4th, I think, yeah.
They were very busy over the weekend.
Slammed,
yeah.
Sunday we ran out of skates. People were trying to get their skate, and they were watching the weather. So
yeah, they knew it was going to be long. So
why do you think that? What's your interpretation of why suddenly Sunday slam? What?
You know, the community is a small community, and a lot of families will go together. So there was a lot of birthday parties. There was a group that decided to have their birthday at Watts and just come and pay the daily fee and have their party on the ice. So that was kind of cool. But you really get a lot of the preschool parents who kind of get to know each other through preschool go, hey, why don't we go to Watts today? And it's really a great activity in the community on a Sunday. It seems to just
be like the thing
to do. It's when it's cold and not or nice and cool.
That's true.
And the holiday too. Yeah.
And Sunday was the whole season, isn't
it? Like people know it's going to be closing soon, and suddenly they're.
The weather was perfect weather for it. And,
yeah.
You know, that's
people
it's all.
People are really persnickety about weather.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Sunday afternoon was also a sports lull. So there was a lot of dads there with their kids. I was there with my kids. And there was a sports lull. We didn't really have the Bulls and the Blackhawks. Either weren't playing or it wasn't worth watching. The Bears are done. So the Olympics really weren't up at that time. So it was just for lack of things that was the place to be.
Yeah, I was there on Sunday and it was busy.
Yes.
Okay.
Any other questions? Bobby? Okay, Chris, do you have anything to add to your report?
I don't know if there's not any questions about the report.
I had a question about the fans in the fitness room, where they were going.
They're going to go by the treadmill.
Oh, jeez.
Is there any, going to put any fan, where I find it to be really hot is in the stretching area.
Yeah, so we actually talked about that, and we found that people are messing with our thermostat up there. Isn't that terrible? So we are going to put cages over them so people can't mess with them because we'll go up there and they'll be adjusted one way or the other. Like people think I'm going to go in there, I'm cold, I'm going to move it all the way over to make it heat, and then it gets way hot up there. And are we putting a fan up in that area too?
You know, we have the opportunity because we're able to tie the fans in the lighting system and put them really wherever we want. So we're going to put up 4, evaluate that, and see how it goes. Secure the thermostats and see if that really can regulate our temperature situation. Because it can get, you know, it takes a couple of hours, but it can get really hot. Obviously.
Really hot, yeah.
The thermostat.
If someone's messed with that. So they're on order and we'll put them up as soon as possible.
I think that was been messing with the thermostat.
Probably the same guy who took the water bottle. Any other questions?
Chris, did you get a note
wall
from
mounted.
Andre?
Yeah.
Regards to?
Flooded walkway.
Well, like you said, so you know that there's been some concern about the walkways at Hawk flooding. So what we've decided to do is that, because I haven't gotten a call, and we have one or two people, so I have asked Chris to have his staff go out there and check the walkways and document how much actually flooding were occurring, and if the flooding is any different than the village sidewalks. So, because right now, you have to remember, right now the ground is frozen, and we got an inch of water within a couple hours. Everything in Glencoe was flooded. In fact, I went, was it last Thursday or Friday? I walked down there, I was just gonna see. Our walkway and clock was perfect, and the village streets were, the sidewalks were flooded. Yeah. So this time of year, that's gonna happen. So we have to look at the at the situation around it that's happening. I know Chris's guys are out there because Cawk is flooded, as are all of our parks, because you have to remember that's what they're designed for. A lot of times they're designed to hold water so that they don't flood the houses. So you'll see a lot of the parks flooded right now and probably for a while. So he was out there at Cawk pumping out because we know that people use it as a walkway so it wouldn't freeze tonight. So they're doing everything they can. But before we rush in there and say we have a problem, we have to see if we really do have a problem before we rush to it. So they've been documenting it and writing it down and checking it daily to see what the situation is. Because we don't see it a big issue. Yeah, oh, it's not. Or the last time we got a call or someone brought it up was exactly the same thing. Again, a big rain in the middle of winter with frozen ground. The water's not going to go anyplace. It's going to stay on the surface until it drains off into the system. So
every block in Glencoe has flooded sidewalks.
Well, every town, we have flood watch. I mean, my phone was burning up on flood watches. So we'll watch it in every circumstance. And remember, as I told Dudley, and I don't, you two weren't on the board, when we built Hawk, it was decided that we weren't going to put an extensive drainage system in there. We knew that was a bowl and that park holds water, and we did not put a drainage system. That would have been like the $600,000 option. We chose not to do that at that time. So let's see if there is a problem. We can always go back and make recommendations of what we could do at different points of price, and then we'll go from there. But let's see if there's even a problem first.
And you're not getting, you said you got even two calls about it.
I've gotten no calls. You got one call?
Typically, you have to really have to like today.
Yeah. So we'll watch that and see. You know, and we understand that people use that as a quick way to get to the train station. But when the village sidewalks are having the same problem, you know, yeah.
Can I ask, Lisa, is there an alternate pathway from the train station to Hazel?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Sidewalk. Yeah. But you want it for the record. So I think so that's what we'll continue to do. You will hear, I'm sure in the community you will hear that our parks are full of water.
Yes.
And yes, they are.
Yes, they are.
Yes. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay.
Erin, do you have anything yet, Ed?
No, we're in the middle of brochure season.
She's busy as could be.
Erin,
so.
Have you had a chance to go over the recommendations from our ADA consultant and how that impacts all our communications? Yes. Okay.
Well, it'll be part of our.
It'll be part of our plan. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Great.
We might hire one of those companies to have them, you know, do a survey of our websites. You know, so. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Oh, so safety. Me now. Oh, safety. We're very safe. I don't think there's anything unusual.
Very safe. I like that.
We're very safe.
Okay, we're safe.
Anything else you want to add? Okay, we're good. Actually, I have to say that Liz, I'll give her a little shout out. Vistine has been doing all of our CPR first aid training. So last year, we decided that we wanted all of our staff. Seasonal also to go through first aid and CPR. It's always been full-time staff, but part-time also now goes through that. And it's a four-hour class. I sat through it the other day, and she did a phenomenal job. It's very, very comprehensive. So that is something, that's a big undertaking for all the staff we have and a big expense of the Park District, but we felt that was something that we wanted to make sure we did have done.
Do you have CPR training for lifeguards on the phenomenon?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, camp too.
And is Alex training included in that?
We
did EpiPens.
Yeah, EpiPens we did. Yep.
We also brought in an allergist this year for all of our preschool teachers during the service. So we bring someone to talk about different types of allergies. But then during camp training, we do talk about EpiPens and allergy. And we're looking about other advanced training this year for camp staff.
The commissioners can pay the cost.
You want to do first aid? You could definitely do it. You don't have to pay the cost, definitely.
Oh,
yeah.
We run adult classes too.
Yep.
So they're not butchered.
Yeah, very interesting.
Yeah.
We can definitely look into that.
Good question. Just great job.
Can you get some of those out?
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah. I just had a question on the safety thing of the three workers' comp claims. Were they insignificant in nature? Is that more than usual?
We can't really talk about exactly things. It's not more than usual. Actually, we had Federm out and it said that we're actually lower than the most districts our size. We can't talk about specifics, but it was just, I guess, wear and tear kind of
just
injury. Nothing we can change to make.
It's not a spike. It's not a spike.
Well, it's a little spike for us, but not unusual for the district and for what we're doing and the season that these injuries
People
are occurring.
Do physical work.
So they do physical work and things happen. Yeah.
Workers' comp. Okay.
Okay. Any other questions?
Okay.
I have comments about the goals, and I don't know where that falls.
That's in my report.
Which is next.
So I was just going to bring up goals. So as you see, we have our we have completed our goals for the 2017-18 year, and staff did a phenomenal job once again. As you know, some of them are ongoing. Some start in 1 year and they go over to multiple years. But overall, if you just look over and see how many were completed and how many to the goals, they did a phenomenal job. So, Stephanie, what's your question?
Oh, I just thought there were some exciting things in that that maybe I didn't notice last time.
Okay.
One was that you're looking at providing enrichment outside of TACOP, like at Amshalom or other.
Which number is that?
13, number one.
I don't remember what number
it was. Oh, yeah.
Which I think is great, because I know that's something that I was at.
It was actually not at their facilities. It's transferring them from their facility to ours, so busing them to our facility. But still, yeah. Or neighboring schools. For example, we identified that, say, Highland Park, which is just right over, that they're not being served. So maybe there's a possibility that we can go in and get them and bring them over to our program. So looking creatively outside the box in different areas if we can. We do have challenges finding bus drivers, so that's going to slow that one down a little bit, but, you know.
Yeah, because it does in between times.
Yeah.
And then there was a parent workshop on there, which I think is great.
Yeah.
And rec track improvements. So I thought all of those were exciting.
Thank you. Yeah, the point of sale at the beach, that was a big accomplishment for actually this whole team. You don't understand how much they had to really work together to, I remember 5 years when I sat here, they wanted to do it right away. I'm like, this is gonna take a while to figure out, to make sure it doesn't just fail when you're down there. So we took the time, made all the right steps. They worked together as a team and it worked really well, very well received. And now the data we're gonna get from that is, it's just great, so we can start benchmarking. We can really make some really good decisions based on that data. So,
great. Okay, anything else in your report?
Let's see, I just wanted to go over a few things. Yeah, you know, I can't. Okay, so strategic plan. So we've been working as staff. As you know, when Barbara met with you, you decided those major goals. And so the staff has been redefining the strategy. So we actually just had a conference call with Barbara just the other day to hone in those even more. And then she came out and met with staff part-time, full-time. So we're ready to bring her back to show you some of those strategies at the March committee meeting. So that's March 13th. So she's going to come out. So that agenda is going to be a little full. It's going to have Barbara Howler doing that that discussion, and then we'll have Alta Manu coming out and talking about the parking lot, because we have to get that moving along. So I think I originally also had the just preliminary brainstorming ideas on the Old Green Bay Trail, or not Old Green Bay Parkways discussion. I think I'm going to push that back to April because there'll be too much in that meeting. So that's something to look at. So we're working on that. We're going to bring that back to you. Is there anything else on here? Conference reports are in here. As you can see, we do those conference reports, but they also report back to their teams. And we have things called lunch and learns where we report back on where we attended a conference, any takeaways that we can have.
I wanted to add, that's great to have the reports, not only to have the folks kind of revisit what they listened to and learned, but also to share with us what's going on. I had a question. Did the other commissioners get the copies of the handouts that I gave you?
Yes, I emailed them out to everybody.
Okay.
Yep. Not in this four packet, but I emailed them.
I think it was in one before.
A while ago, yeah.
One before. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yep. Yeah, I did this. We've been doing this for the last 3 years, so this has been here, and that's very good.
This is better this year.
I thought so, too. I learned more this year.
Oh, did you? Mm-hmm. Same exact format. So.
Some people give, like, a bullet point.
Yeah, yeah.
And some people just say this was what the topic was. So.
Clearly, you better be paying attention.
They do a good job. They take it very seriously, and they know it. So. I guess that's all I have for my report. If you have a question to me.
Questions? Any more questions? All right, shall we move?
Quick one.
Oh. Yep.
Anytime, Chris, that you want to talk to us about what you learned in that beekeeping session, I'm all ears. Because it really did sound interesting, and you didn't go to some of the
We'll do that now.
Another time, but
is it this?
I bet you learned a lot.
Okay, never mind.
I did actually learn a lot from beekeeping.
Okay.
We are definitely thinking about it. A lot of park districts are doing, but well, they're not going to come out and attack you unless you go in there. But it's become park districts have. There's a few that have modeled it, and that's who did the conference. It's great educational.
Oh,
Highland Park is selling honey.
So everybody is. Glenview's selling honey. Oak Park's, Oak Brook, Oak Park.
I actually
Glenview. So we are looking for that. So okay. So going on to the next one.
Okay.
Action items.
Did you lend me copies?
Okay. I will entertain a motion to approve the GYS stipend of $10,000 with the requirement of providing the Glencoe Park District with a certificate of insurance as required by Poderna, as presented.
So moved.
Second.
Discussion? Roll call.
Commissioner Boren?
Yes.
Commissioner Brooks?
Yes.
Commissioner Gaines?
Yes.
Commissioner Ludden?
Yes.
President Underdunk?
Yes. Okay. I entertain a motion to approve the SNAP stipend of $1,000 with the requirement of providing the Glencoe Park District with a certificate of insurance as required by Poderna as presented.
Second.
Discussion?
Yes.
Okay.
It's possible that since they have a combined board and a combined incorporation, that they might have a single certificate of insurance for those two programs, GYS and SNAP, or are they giving you separate insurance prior to?
They're combined. They're combined. Yeah, so that's fine.
Record that I thought they might be. Okay.
Okay. Any other discussion? We're done with that? Okay, roll call, please.
Commissioner Boren?
Yes.
Commissioner Brooks?
Yes.
Commissioner Gaines?
Yes.
Commissioner Ludden?
Yes.
President Undrunk?
Yes. Okay, next item, entertain a motion to approve the Glencoe Junior High Project stipend of $10,000 for the requirement of providing the Glencoe Park District with a certificate of insurance as required by for Vermont as presented.
So moved.
Second.
Discussion? Discussion, roll call.
Commissioner Boren?
Yes.
Commissioner Brooks?
Yes.
Commissioner Gaines?
Yes.
Commissioner Ludden?
Yes.
President Underdonk?
Yes.
Right.
Okay. Entertain a motion to accept the ADA transition plan as presented.
So moved.
Second.
Second?
Oh.
Okay.
Okay.
Discussion?
So are we, we're accepting that that's the plan, but not like we're doing this in 2 years and we're doing this?
Yeah, no, nope. You're just accepting the document that the consultants provided us. So it's pretty much, it's similar, that's why we say accept, not approve. Mm-hmm. It's like our audit. Mm-hmm. It's not that we can go back and say, oh, we don't like that, we don't like that. This is the requirements as set by professionals. So we're accepting that.
Except
that
well,
this
we're
report that we have,
yes,
yep.
Okay. Okay. Roll call.
Commissioner Boren. Oh, sorry.
Oh yes.
I just want so that will the minutes reflect that we're accepting the report to us, but we don't view it as a. It may be labeled as that, but we don't view it as an actual transition plan.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Based on the conversation we had before.
Well, yeah, so it's a, yeah, it's not the goals is, or a timeline. We're just, but this is,
it's not an
actual plan, yeah.
We need a vote on that, though.
Yep, we do.
So will the minutes reflect that that's what we're accepting?
We're accepting the report from Recreation Accessibility Consultants for our ADA.
To answer your question directly, at prior meetings we had a discussion about the actual language. And at that point we said, when we have something like this come up, we're accepting it.
Yeah, he's saying it should be called a plan or it should be called a report.
We're accepting it as it's titled and presented to us.
Yeah.
We're not approving it. We're not voting on that. We're not saying what we're going to do in there. We're simply accepting the document. So that's what it's saying. That's how they titled the document. That's what we're accepting.
So, thank you. I appreciate the nuance of the language, and I'm just asking that our minutes reflect that we are accepting the document as it's labeled, but that we don't view it as an actual actionable plan, whatever they call it.
I agree with what you're saying.
I think the minutes are going to reflect elsewhere that the board has instructed to me develop a timeline based on this plan. So I don't think you put it in this. You're accepting this plan as presented, and the minutes have already reflected that you told me to do a timeline.
Well, is it that big a deal?
I think the motion, you don't put it. The motion's a motion, and then you can reflect in the minutes later after the motion. I don't know.
Isn't there some Robert's Rules way to make an amended motion or something?
Oh, there is, but I guess I don't understand what you're asking for.
I think that we would be happier if we were simply to say that for example, I entertain a motion to accept WT Associates' plan as presented to us this evening, or the plan documents as presented to us this evening.
What about conclusions?
Is that offered as a substitute motion?
I couldn't hear what you said, Chris. I'm sorry.
Conclusions and recommendations?
Titled a portion of the report is Conclusions and Recommendations, Final Report to the Glencoe Park District.
Just say that. Yeah.
Right. Okay. That would be fine.
I accept that.
Okay.
Perfect.
Okay.
So we're making a motion to accept the final report to the Glencoe Park District, conclusion and recommendations from WT and Associates as presented.
Okay. So we need a roll call on that?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. Commissioner Boren?
Yes.
Commissioner Brooks?
Yes.
Commissioner Gaines?
Yes.
Commissioner Ludden?
Yes.
President Underdonk?
Yes.
Good solution.
Okay.
That was John's.
Yeah, it was. Yeah.
Okay. I entertain a motion to approve that the community hall be renamed Rod Aiken Community Hall as presented.
So moved.
Second.
Discussion? Okay. All in favor?
Yes.
All in favor say aye.
Say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Opposed? No. Okay. Yes. Okay. Nobody's here from the public.
You don't see people here.
Moving along.
He's seen ghosts.
Okay. Any other business?
No, not for me.
Okay, and then I guess we're going to have some people leave the room.
Well, before we get to the other
part. No, you have to say this first.
Okay, the board will now enter into a closed session where no action will be taken. I entertain a motion that pursuant to Section 5 ILS 120/2 of the Open Meetings Act, the board will enter into a closed session to discuss personnel as mandated in Section 2.06, comma, 5 ILCS 120/2, C1. Okay, those present during the executive session include the commissioners.
And for the first part of it, Carol and I will be at the
things. Okay. So, this requires a motion.
So,
Second.
Discussion?
I think Commissioner Gaines would like us to pause right after we take this vote for 5 minutes and get cake.
Deep breath and say how grateful and happy we are that we're celebrating Lisa Shepherd's 5th anniversary.
Cut the cake. Carol, can you cut the cake? Someone cut the cake.
We need a roll call.
Yes. I need a roll
call.
No, because we can't go into executive session because they're still here, so we're pausing. How do you pause? Wait, hold on. We'll just pause. Be careful what you say now.
This is a roll call to enter into the priority vote.
Yes,
so
did.
We need to have the discussion.
No, we have to have a roll call.
Roll call vote.
Yes, that would be
the exec session.
Yes.
Hershey cake. Oof, yum.
So, Commissioner Boren?
Yes.
Commissioner Brooks?
Yes.
Commissioner Gaines?
Yes.
Commissioner Ludden?
Yes.
President Underdonk?
Yes.
Okay. Let's see if the next part of yours. Okay, so now we have to stop the recorder and put in the executive recorder.
Regular session.
Sure,
and executive session closed.
Okay, yeah. Stop recorder, switch the card, start recorder.
Done.
Return to open session. I entertain a motion to return to open session.
So moved.
Mm-hmm.
Second, please. Okay. Discussion? No. Roll call vote. I'll start. Dudley? Aye.
Yes.
Steve Gaines, aye.
Lisa, aye.
Aye.
Josh Levin, aye.
Okay.
That's everybody. Okay. Passes. Okay. Now, action, if any, on items discussed in closed session. Recommended.
No action needs to be taken
following closed session. So, recommended motion, entertained to adjourn.
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Stop recorder.